Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I am your host, Laura Reeves, and you guys, I'm pretty excited. We have a new guest to the podcast today. Dr. Stacy Halls is a veterinary ophthalmologist. She is a dog person, and she's going to talk to us today about emergencies that involve the eyeball of our dogs. And this is a big topic. It's got a lot of scary ramifications for people. Pure Dog Talk is proudly sponsored by Trupanion, medical insurance for the life of your pet. This year, give your buyers the gift of peace of mind with a special go-home day offer from Trupanion. This offer provides puppies with immediate coverage so they're protected should they get into mischief in their new homes. Trupanion covers pets against unexpected accidents and illnesses with no payout limits, helping ease the financial burden when a pet gets sick or injured. Even better, Trupanion is able to pay the veterinarian directly at the time of checkout, which means less out-of-pocket for your buyers. You can get this special offer for your buyers as part of the Breeder Support Program. It's completely free to join and available for breeders in the U.S., Canada, and Australia. Getting started is quick and easy. Just follow the link on my partner page at puredogtalk.com to get started. I'm coming today to talk to you about Brilliant Pad, and it is amazing and an incredible way for me to do my potty training with the puppies and not ever have to touch any yucky stuff. Brilliant Pad literally rolls the mess up and you never touch it. So I really wanted to talk to you guys about that, share with you the experience I had with it. It's like the most amazing thing you've ever seen. Stacy, I'm super excited that you could join us.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here. I've listened to bits and pieces of the podcast in the past. And then when a couple of mutual friends had reached out saying that you wanted to do this, I was excited to participate.
Yeah, I think it's going to be great. So Stacy, give us a little bit of 411, right? Like, you didn't start out in dogs, but now you are, and you have a Doberman, I think I saw.
I have two.
Nice.
Yeah. So started with one, and you can't just have one. So I actually started out as, well, really a cat person, but my family, we never really had dogs. My mom was a cat person. She never wanted a dog. So didn't really know I loved them. I liked them, but didn't know I loved them. Got involved with horses just through volunteer work when I was in high school. And then through that kind of fell in love with veterinary medicine. Helped a little bit on the like background of competitive horses, never really competed myself, but always thought after vet school, I was going to do horses. And then vet school happened. Realized I liked horses, didn't love horses in terms of veterinary medicine. And so got involved with ophthalmology, absolutely fell in love. So figured after vet school, after residency, I'd go back to horses competitively because I'd have the time and finances. And then it just kind of didn't happen and kind of realized that didn't really want to do that sport. So was kind of looking for something else, but with animals, because animals has always been my love. And I've always loved Dobermans. And so decided I wanted to kind of do more obedience stuff. Literally told my breeder for my first Doberman, said, have absolutely no interest in showing, just kind of looking for an obedience dog. Found a really great breeder. She's like, I've got a great dog. She could be a show dog, but, you know, I think she'd be a great performance dog. And so I said, cool, thanks. Don't want to show. Just want to do obedience. And then we were struggling a little bit with the judge's exam. And she said, why don't you go try some confirmation classes? They're great at teaching young dogs. Mm-hmm. And the rest is history.
I have to tell you, the number of people, like really big, longtime, important people in our sport that started in obedience and then the rest is history. I cannot tell you. I think it is so fabulous.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that it's opened my eyes in more ways than I even realized, because for the most part, right now, a huge part of what I've done for at least the past year or two has been confirmation, because my dogs are young, they're 2 and 3. And then now I'm just starting to get into rally with my female, who's the older one. But, you know, like, she's what I started with. And then I kind of was doing the confirmation with her. And then she didn't love it. And she could have finished, but, you know, the breeder was supportive of whatever I decided. She's not really needed for my breeding program. You know, whatever you decide, you decide. And then I lucked out and got another Doberman who... the main reason I got him was for confirmation. So, you know, before, my previous one wasn't pick of the litter, but was pretty, well, is pretty. And then this one was like, no, I want to do confirmation with. So that's kind of my focus with him, which is good because he's still installing. He's very pretty. He's not quite smart yet for a Doberman.
Boy thing.
It's a red boy thing too, I've learned. But yeah, I got him way before I was ready for a second dog, but I couldn't imagine my life without either of them right now. And he's just kind of like completed what I want to be doing, at least right now. I know there'll be more dogs in my future, but not for a while. Please don't contact me.
Here's a dog. You know, I mean, that's a thing. You do know that, right?
Like, oh, yes, I do. That's how I ended up with my second dog. So, I mean, I love him to death. He's great. But yeah, so that's kind of how I fell into it. And then now it's my life, I say, you know, like, a lot of the weekends I'm either at shows, or like this weekend I'm doing a rally trial. And so it's given me somewhat of a purpose outside of my job. I feel that my friendships and my connections within the dog show community has made me a better veterinarian. And then my training has made me a better veterinarian. Like, my female's a reactive dog. I mean, she's a Doberman. They're kind of all reactive, but it made me just do courses online and educate myself more about dog behavior than veterinary medicine, because you don't really get a ton of that in veterinary medicine.
You know, I think that's really important, Stacey. And I think that I want listeners to stop and listen to that for a minute, because asking your veterinarian, unless it is a specific veterinary behaviorist or behavior, you know, like, it's not part of the curriculum.
It's not a huge part of the curriculum. And granted, there are tons of veterinarians out there that have an interest in behavior, that have had dogs and have given themselves that education. But in general, it's not a huge part of the curriculum. Like, we had a course, but, you know, for me personally, I don't know about my classmates, but I didn't take a ton away from it, because when I was in vet school, I was equine focused. So, like, I didn't care about dog behavior. So even though dog sports has become my life, it's bled into my job. And as a veterinary ophthalmologist, particularly, like, I tell clients all the time, the worst thing you can do to a nervous dog is look it in the eyes and get in its face. And that is my job. Exactly. And so I kind of bring out the worst in dogs in a way. And understanding my own dog's behavior has kind of forced me in a positive way to approach patients very differently. And I've gotten a ton of very positive feedback as a veterinarian with how me and my team approach these dogs. And I might have gotten there eventually, but my exposure to kind of dog training and the dog world in general has really kind of bled into my life as a veterinarian.
I love that. And I'm going to take some of that, because I'm talking to vet students in a couple of weeks and I'm going to tell them that. So I think that's great. Okay. So ophthalmology, talk to us about eyeballs. I mean, they're kind of important, right?
Yes, yes and no. I mean, they're very important, but in general, what I always tell clients, a dog doesn't really need its eyes. Love my job, but in the grand scheme of things, dogs can still have a quality of life if they lose their vision. However, I don't have this job because I think dogs don't need to see or have their eyes. And so, yes, they are very important, but I kind of always start with that because of the fact that things happen. Dogs, they get sick, there's genetic diseases, all the things, and they might lose their vision. It might be the end of the dog's show career and competitive career, but it's not the end of the dog's quality of life. However, we obviously, especially most people that listen to this podcast, they want their dogs to continue in the dog sports or confirmation world. And so they are very important for that, because it is a part of their communication and how they kind of get around in the world. And so, in general, you know, eyes, they are a very unique structure when it comes to every other organ. Well, most other organs in the body, they have what you call, the fancy word for it is a blood aqueous barrier. It kind of protects the inside of the eye from the rest of the immune system. The eye itself is called an immunoprivileged site. And so when things go wrong and the regular immune system kind of gets into the eye, it can go very wrong very quickly. And so in general, eyes problems can get very bad very quickly. So emergencies can go from, oh, it's just a little scratch, to suddenly you're like, oh, now the eyeball is melting out of the face. And so that's always very scary, both for an owner, a dog, and then a lot of the time veterinarians in general. And so I stress that because of the fact that 9 times out of 10, yes, it's just going to squint for a couple days. You're going to throw some antibiotics in it and it's probably going to be fine. But that one case of yours, that one situation, the dogs can lose their vision. They can lose their eye. So you kind of want to take those emergencies seriously.
Okay. So let's walk through a few. Dr. Mark Greer and I had a podcast a little bit earlier and we just kind of glanced off the reference to the neonates because we were talking neonates. So baby puppies, when their eyelids are still closed and they get an infection behind the eyelid, it's an obsession of mine. It happened to me in a litter of wire hair pointers when I was just a kid, still at home with my parents. And so it sort of scarred me for life.
Yep.
You know, and it can scar the dog for life. And your baby puppy's eye is like the size of a grape and green goo is coming out of it. This is terrifying.
Yeah, especially because they're young. They're less than 2 weeks old. And so you're kind of limited with what medications you can give and what you're comfortable giving because of the fact that, I mean, you hope that you have puppies that are healthy and don't need to worry about medications. And so I actually did help locally a breeder with this where she had a litter of puppies and one of them did have that kind of huge eye. And one of the biggest things that you can do is get that eyelid open. Even though the eyelids are only supposed to open at about 2 weeks old, you don't want that material to stay in there. And so if it's not draining yet, warm compressing and just gently massaging those eyes open to get that material draining. Because if it stays in there, it's going to ruin the eye. It's going to cause scar tissue that can affect the puppy for the rest of its life. And I haven't seen it a ton, but in the worst case scenarios, usually the shelter dogs that are kind of not brought in to care, but they can lose their eye. And so outside of medications, just getting that eye open is really the most important part. And so, you know, getting that eye open is definitely the first step that I recommend because you don't really want to give systemic antibiotics to a dog that's that young. So it's the dilution is the solution to pollution kind of statement is what kind of stands here. And then, you know, once it's open, using just eyewash, not contact solution, but just eyewash to kind of flush everything out as much as the
puppy. Just like a saline even?
Yeah, so saline is good. Sometimes it's purified water. In my clinic, I have like a purified water. You know, a lot of the time on like Amazon or at CVS, any of those, you can get it's an irrigation solution, or even if all you have at home is artificial tears, just kind of applying a bunch of artificial tears. And then once you get all the discharge out, you know, some form of topical antibiotic can definitely be beneficial, especially if there's some conjunctivitis present, which is going to be. Most often just flushing it out and opening it fixes the problem. But if there's an ulcer there and you don't know because you don't have the staining and all this stuff, you just want to be cautious and kind of just do the topical antibiotics. In general, something like Neopoly Back, which a lot of people have, or a topical drop. Most often, if I'm prescribing it, I'll use tobramycin because it's you only need something that's superficial. But I feel like a lot of the time people have Neopoly Back in the dog world. You just have to make sure there's no steroid in it. So the two steroids that can be in Neopoly Back is hydrocortisone or dexamethasone. Dexamethasone probably the most common, but hydrocortisone is the one that's most commonly missed because people are just looking for dexamethasone on the thing. And one little trick that I teach students as well as owners is that if there's a pink strip on the box, it's a steroid.
That's a tiny detail I love. Okay.
Yeah. So in at least the United States, I don't know about outside of this country, but a lot of the eye drops and the ointments are kind of designated by either cap color or on the box, there'll be a marking. So if you kind of look at a Neopoly back or a Neopoly Dex right next to each other, they look almost exactly the same, except the Neopoly Dex or hydrocortisone will have a pink strip and a tan strip, whereas the Neopoly back will only have a tan strip. So tan is antibiotic, pink is steroid.
That is fabulous. This is the kind of stuff I love. You can manage this at home, right? Just with the baby puppies.
Oh, yeah.
When should you say, okay, I need to have somebody take a look at this?
So I would say if you're seeing a worsening within 24 hours, get a veterinarian involved. If you're not seeing a kind of improvement within 24 to 48 hours, I'd probably start seeking care, because in those situations, I would be concerned the infection's gotten into the eye. It's pretty uncommon for that to happen, but if it does happen, again, it's pretty bad, and that's when you might need to utilize some systemic antibiotics.
Okay. Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute. All right, crew, check it. The results are in, and 96 of the 100 top all-breed show dogs in 2023 are fed ProPlan. The high-performance food is made with 30% protein and 20% fat to fuel the metabolic needs of an active, keenly motivated show dog while maintaining lean muscle. The owners and handlers of these top champions choose to feed ProPlan because it delivers concentrated nutrition to optimize oxygen metabolism for increased endurance, a pivotal part of campaigning a show dog. ProPlan promotes nutrition for joint health and mobility and for healthy skin and coat. The ease of feeding one of the ProPlan All Life Stages formulas that provide complete and balanced nutrition for puppies to senior dogs is an added bonus. Try ProPlan and see why more owners and handlers of top show dogs choose it. Visit Purina.com/ProPlan/dogs to learn more about the number one dog food of show dog owners and handlers in 2023. All right, you guys. Today's episode is sponsored by Clubistry, the leading club and membership management software designed to simplify administrative tasks, engage members, and establish a dynamic online presence for clubs of all sizes. With Clubistry, you can manage your club's website, memberships, applications, renewals, payments, events, roster, permissions, among many more features that will help your club thrive. If you didn't get a chance to listen to my conversation with the Clubistry team from December, make sure you go back and give it a check out. With many dog clubs already using Clubistry to manage their websites and memberships, you too can join for free today to discover how you can revolutionize your club's management and online presence. Visit clubistry.com to learn more and start for free today. That's our first one. What's another? What's your most common IC emergency about the eyeball?
I mean, I think corneal ulcers, probably the classic eye emergencies. They can be very basic emergencies that I feel like a lot of dog show people and the dog sports people that understand dogs deal with on their own. And so you can get corneal ulcers, the way that we classify it is going to be based on size and whether or not it has a complication, but more importantly, depth. So a superficial ulcer is usually not a huge deal. These are going to be the main types of ulcers that you're going to get from dogs rubbing their face. So like Shih Tzus love to rub their face after they eat. A lot of brachycephalics do. They kind of just get something in their eye, rub it, ulcer. That 9 times out of 10, within 7 to 10 days, it's going to heal on its own. But again, it can get complicated. It can get infected. And the cornea is only about 0.8 millimeters thick. So it's super, super thin. And so an infection anywhere else, not a huge deal. An infection on the surface of the eye can be very bad very quickly. You can lose the eye within 24 hours. So, wow. You know, if it's, yeah.
I've heard that before.
I've had one in the hospital that I was medicating aggressively, and then we still lost the battle. And it like developed an ulcer in the hospital. This was like during my residency, and we started treating right away, and we still lost it. But that's like the worst case scenario. Like, I don't want to freak everyone out, but that's the worst case scenario. And so, you know, if there's a little bit of squinting, and if you ever see a divot on your dog's eye, just take it in, because if you can see a divot, you've lost tissue and you don't know how deep that is. If there's a little bit of squinting, a little bit of cloudiness, you know, the recommendation as a veterinarian is always to take it in, because again, you don't know if it's infected or not. Typically, artificial tears and topical antibiotics is going to help most of these heal. You know, and if you keep getting chronic corneal ulcers, especially in the younger dogs, that's when you kind of want to have it evaluated, because it's an emergency when they get the ulcer. But if it keeps happening, that's when you kind of want to look further of why it keeps happening.
Right.
So
what else do you see? You've got all the shapes of entropic and ectropic and all of those kinds of things. When do you recommend people start really paying attention? When do you see a problem with those kind of things developing?
Yeah, so if you're getting chronic discharge, you should question why. Some of the times it's benign, like little hairs right in the corner of the eye. We call it medial canthal trichiasis, that are just kind of acting like a wick that's pulling the tears off the eyes, but it's not causing a problem. And that's the best case scenario. But if you're seeing chronic discharge, then there's something that's causing that. So whether that's, you know, an abnormality in eyelid, whether it's an abnormal eyelash somewhere that's causing an issue. Allergic conjunctivitis is always my favorite, because they come in freaked out and I say, hey, just do some eye drops. But when you're seeing discharge, it's not getting better, you know, especially if you feel like, oh, maybe it's allergies and it's not responding to allergy medications, just kind of investigating. For entropion, a lot of the time I'll say look for discharge on the outside corner, because that's a super common location for entropion. Discharge typically is right in the inner corner where most people know. But if you're ever seeing discharge kind of on the outer corner of the eyes, that usually means there's either way too much discharge or the eyelids are rolling in that location to kind of wick those tears away, just based on the structure of the eyes.
I just thought of another one that I had that was a weird, you know, like 10 weird things that can happen to your dog's eyeball.
Naturally.
Prolapsed third eyelid I had on an Akita. Yeah. Million years ago.
Oh, freaked that's
me
a weird
the
one.
Hell out.
Yeah. So happening in an Akita, mm-hmm. super weird. So as an Akita owner, you might not know that's common. If it happens in a bulldog, those owners probably won't freak out, because especially the breeders, because they know what happens. And so it's prolapsed gland of the third eyelid, or cherry eye is the most common thing. All of a sudden, you can see this red protruding tissue from the inner corner of the eye. And we'll see them pop up in the emergency room every now and then. The owners come running, freaking out. They think their eyes rolling out. And
I get that.
Yeah, no, and I understand. Like a third eyelid, you don't know your dog necessarily has it. It's not like an anatomy we have as humans. So you don't realize it's there until it's there. So it's not truly an emergency, but it can look pretty scary. Big tissue, like pink round ball, looks like a cherry in the middle corner of the eye. For the most part, the dogs don't care. Sometimes when it gets an inflamed and irritated, particularly if they can't blink over it, if they're rubbing at it, you just want to stop them from rubbing, throw a cone on, put artificial tears to lubricate it, and then contact your vet. Most of those you can massage in. There's some YouTube videos on how to massage a cherry eye in. And, you know, it's not necessarily going to permanently stay in, but it can certainly decrease inflammation. Doesn't work all the time. Sometimes it only works for a couple minutes and then it's back out. But it doesn't harm the dog unless you're super aggressive, but it doesn't hurt them. So
is that something you normally recommend taking to surgery, or you just let it be what it is?
Those we are now recommending to take to surgery. Okay. So many decades ago, they would just cut them out because that's a permanent solution. But it does lead to problems down the road. The third eyelid gland definitely creates about 50% of the tear production for a dog. And the dogs that get cherry eyes as young dogs are also predisposed to dry eye later on in life. So if you take that third eyelid gland, you're now just not guaranteeing, but increasing the risk pretty significantly that they're going to get it. So we do recommend taking those to surgery to pocket that. Well, there's a couple different surgeries of what you can do now, but in general, just putting them back in place and securing them in place, depending on your ophthalmologist, I'd say there's probably 3 or 4 pretty common surgeries all have the same success rates that they might elect to do to kind of secure those in place. But yeah, we don't recommend leaving them out and we do not recommend removing them.
Okay. Good. Yeah. Good information. The one that I had was the Akita was relatively minor and he wound up, it sort of, I'm not going to say it resolved itself, but it eventually pigmented in. Like I didn't have it removed and you never knew it was there.
Yeah. And so those deeper orbited dogs, or if the gland's not chronically exposed, which again, deeper orbited dogs, it probably won't be, it may not cause an issue. And an Akita is not really predisposed to dry eye. So that gland might have stopped functioning, but you didn't know because it wasn't exposed to dry eye. And the other thing that you might think is a cherry eye can actually be an averted cartilage, which you're going to see in Great Danes. I've seen it in Vizslas, a lot of sporting dogs, where it looks like a cherry eye, but it's actually the third eyelid is kind of a T-shaped cartilage, and the gland's kind of at the bottom of the T. And what can happen is the gland stays in place, but the cartilage actually bends. And those, even some veterinarians think that they're cherry eyes, they're the prolapse glands. Those, you know, I do recommend fixing, but don't tend to cause as many problems as a cherry eye. So, right. Yeah, that's something else that could look like a cherry eye.
And what else is on your list?
So I think some other things is, you know, uveitis is probably a huge one, or inflammation inside of the eye. Mm-hmm. Difficult to kind of assess what's going on because a lot of eye issues are like red squinting discharge. But I think it's fresh in my mind because I was just at a show and someone came up to me and like, my dog's eyes are squinting and I think it's an ulcer, but it was actually uveitis. And so the main reason I kind of mentioned that is because again, it can present like an ulcer and you can put the topical antibiotics that a lot of people have and it can result in the inflammation continuing because I've just told you not to put steroids on an eye. Right. And now you're putting the antibiotic because most of the time it's an ulcer, but now you're allowing the eye to continue to have inflammation. And again, an eye is built in a way that it doesn't tolerate inflammation or scar tissue the way the rest of the body does. And so the longer the inflammation is there, the worse the inflammation is, the more scar tissue you can result in. And that can lead to a whole host of other problems. So the way that I would say you can kind of potentially differentiate of how bad it is.
You read my mind. That's amazing. How do I tell the difference?
I was going to say, I've been doing this for 10 years. So that's usually the next question that comes up. And so it can be hard, but I think in terms of the biggest things is if the eye is super cloudy. You know, if the eye is super cloudy, you've got a blue haze to the surface of the eye, that can suggest it's either a bad ulcer or it's an inflammation inside of the eye. If you're able to assess the size of the pupils, so kind of looking to see how constricted the iris is, which is the colored part of the eye, an eye with inflammation is going to be very, very constricted a lot of the time. And so that can be something where if you're not sure, you can look for that. And in those situations, you know, you kind of do want to have them looked at sooner rather than later, not only to get things moving in the right direction with treatment, but also to figure out why. So depending where you are in the country, there can be things that present with uveitis, but end up being systemically affecting the dog. So up in the Northeast, it's going to be tick-borne diseases. When I lived in Milwaukee, everything had blasto, which is a fungus. So it's things that you might first see the signs in the eye, but it can affect the dog systemically.
Okay. That's amazing. All right. One more. What's your next top one that you see?
So I would say probably lacerations, you know, like dog fights, dog tussles. It can be lacerations either to the eye or to the eyelid. You know, the eyelid is designed to be smooth. And if they get a laceration, you generally want to have those fixed sooner rather than later. I usually tell our ER veterinarians, don't wait for me to come in on Monday. You should fix this within 6 hours. Ideally, because of the fact that the eyelid's very vascularized and it's going to try to heal as soon as it's damaged, and you want a smooth lid margin. So if you get a lid laceration, you don't want a step or unevenness of that lid margin, because then that can rub on the eye and cause ulceration. So in general, especially if there's severe lacerations of the lid, you do want to have those looked at sooner rather than later. I would consider that an emergency. And it happens a lot because they're dogs. Yeah. Even when they're fighting sometimes gets a little too exciting, and that can be something. And then definitely lacerations of the cornea. So dog versus dog, most often it's going to be that puppy that just went home and they think it's really cute because it's saying hi to the cat, and suddenly the cat doesn't like it. Yeah, those are emergencies, because again, cats like to try to enter the eye, but they don't like to fix what they start. And cat claws are dirty, so you just want to have that looked at right away.
Yeah. I just thought of another one, foxtails in the eye.
Yeah, so I don't see it a ton out here.
That's a thing.
Yeah, so it's any foreign body. So foxtails, yes, probably pretty common. I think more out west. I've heard a lot of it in California, things like that. Up here in New England, porcupine quills to the eye is a thing. Got some videos, won't share.
So porcupine quills, that's just not a good time.
Yeah. So, you know, any sort of foreign body, sticks, foxtails, things like that, they can be around the eye or they can be in the eye. The biggest thing is don't take it out, because if it's kind of protruding from the eye, you don't know if it's full thickness. And if it's full thickness and it goes into the eye and you remove it, the fluid within the eye is going to come out. And that's not a good thing. Yeah. And so typically what I recommend, if there's any sort of foreign body in or around the eye, throw a cone on to stop the dog from rubbing so they don't drive it further, and take them to their nearest clinic, ideally where there's an ophthalmologist available that can remove it under controlled conditions, because a lot of the time it's not full thickness, but you don't want to be surprised by that, particularly if you're at a dog show or if you're in the middle of the woods. Probably not seeing a ton of porcupines at dog shows, but
we have bird dogs out here. So, I mean, it's
And up here, it's the dogs that go hiking, you know, or even people that let their dogs into their backyard. There's porcupines here, or just running in the woods and they end up with a stick in the eye. Mm-hmm. So
bird dogs. Stick in the eye is pretty normal. Sadly, stick in the eye and foxtail in the eye are both unfortunate circumstances of being a bird dog.
And if you can see that it's like just in the conjunctiva, which is the pink part of the eye, remove it so it doesn't cause issue. But if you have any concerns that it's actually on the cornea itself, I always caution about just pulling it out, because you never know what's going to follow it. And then even if you do pull it out, still go get checked out, because it can be infected, leave pieces behind, things like that.
Okay.
You're like, moving on.
I did not become a veterinarian because I have a very weak stomach. So I'm just saying.
Well, a lot of veterinarians can't talk about this either. That's why I have a job, is because a lot of veterinarians see an eye problem and they're like, go see an ophthalmologist. Yeah. That's a response from a lot of vets too. So you're not alone.
All right. Well, Stacy, I very much enjoyed this conversation. I very much look forward to more of them.
Yeah.
And I really, really appreciate your time.
Yeah, of course. And then if any of your listeners have like other emergencies that they want to hear about, we can always do a part two, because there's tons of emergencies.
There's all kinds of stuff. We're going to talk more. I promise.
Yeah, of course. No, I'm happy to.
Excellent. Thanks so much, Stacy.
All right, crew. I hear from folks pretty much daily asking for a specific topic or for a series of podcasts on a topic. So ask and you shall receive. I've done all the hard work. I've sorted, searched, and compiled 8 different albums from the archives on our most popular topics. And when I say there's a podcast for that, I ain't just a woofin'. Getting yours today is super simple. Just jump on puredogtalk.com/store and click the PDT albums image. And when you're in there, you're going to find a collection of veterinary voices. You're going to find a collection for breeding and whelping hands-on. You'll find Pure Dog Talk University on dog breeding. Love the breeds. Up your game. Owner handlers, the interviews, events and sports. There is so much there. And once you're in those links, you'll be able to read the details of the topic. For a special introductory price of $1.99, you get a link to dozens, up to more than 100 episodes on these specific topics. And while you're there, if you or a friend or family member are just getting started, even just starting a search for your first well-bred purebred dog, you can also check out Auntie Laura's Beginner's Guide to Show Dogs at puredogtalk.com/book to get the foundational Pure Dog Talk episodes with bonus tracks. So hop on it, y'all. These special prices will not last.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.